This is K2BAR, the station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. This is Gordon, W2TTT, roll for the evening. This is the TechNet. The TechNet's purpose is to exchange ideas and it provides an opportunity for inquiries on any subjects related to amateur radio, electronics, or their applications in society and places, as it were. So, if anyone has any questions or comments or confusions, feel free to jump right in, and we'll see. You do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association to participate, and we hope that you will participate, whether or not you are a member. In any case, the format for check-in is by signing in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment or none of the above. We do it by call sign groups, so just bear with us. Alrighty. Well, our first group that we're going to look for is the Alpha group, any station call sign beginning with Alpha, and check in with your call sign, your name, and have a question or comment or none of the above. Please call K2BAR, sorry. Okay, nothing heard on that. That's pretty straightforward. Call sign group.
K2BAR, this is N2OEL. One comment.
Well, I got you with one comment. Not a problem. I know the November station. Call sign name and whether or not you're met or none of the above.
This is NS2KHM. No comment or no question at this point.
This is K2ZO. The only comment I have is your audio is very low. Other than that, nothing else.
You train me to back off the mic. I go play, PGS K31 games to the front, and look what happens. So is that better, Jim?
Yeah, now we can understand you.
Do you want it louder?
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Now, I am talking about 6 inches from the microphone. Alrighty. Any other November stations? Kilo stations. Kilo stations, please. K2BAR. Call sign name and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above.
KF2ID, none of the above for the moment. Ben.
Okay, Ben, good evening to you. KF2ID, the station is transmitted with you. Go now.
2AMI, Tony, no questions.
Okay, very good, Tony. Good evening to you. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR. Call sign name and whether or not you have a question or comment.
K2ZC, Dave, no questions.
Good evening, Dave. Good to hear you. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR.
KA2BDU, no questions.
Good evening, Helmet. Okay, no problem. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2SGF, no questions.
Okay, very, very good. KC2SGF, W2T, or K2BAR. Very good. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, Robert, no problem. Very, very good. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Next one. Whiskey stations, any whiskey stations. Call sign name and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
This is W2JEK, Don, no question.
Good evening, Don. No questions. Very good. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR. All right, any other stations who have not checked in at this time, up to this point, please check in now. This is K2BAR. Call sign name and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. W-I-K-W, Steve, no question. Okay, good evening, Steve. I almost greeted you in French for some reason. I don't know why. Bonsoir, Etienne. Anyway, let's see. What else? Any other stations wishing to check in, please call K2BAR. Okay, we're a little light on the questions here tonight, folks. We have one comment, which I'm hoping stimulates some dialogue. We'll do some announcements, and then we'll get some more questions, or someone want to spout off on a topic. I have one question, that is, what did folks do individually for the VHF contest? I'm kind of curious as to how that went. If you have nothing to report, you need not comment. I know the club decided not to go up on the hill because the weather forecast was, challenging. on that note, Noel, your question, N2OEL, K2BAR.
Okay, before I start, I did mention that Rachel has a story about noise in her mobile and how Jim fixed it. So perhaps later on you should call on her or Jim. It was really interesting. Now, my story is different. As you know, I have a new bicycle. The new bicycle uses what's called a subcontroller. My XYL likes to drive for 20, 25 miles. So after 15 miles of holding the thing with your thumb, it gets really sore. So I figured the subcontroller, which is really a throttle that goes to the controller box itself, which appears to have six humongous MOSFETs in it and a pulse width modulation system, I figured it was a normal 5K resistor with a wiper. Well, Charlie was kind enough to help us at Kidnight. We took it apart. And who would believe what I was so surprised to see what was in there.
Tell us.
Basically, it's the stupidest little thing that I've ever seen, so simple, and yet so much better than a potentiometer, which would, after a while, get noisy and give you jerky operation. There's two parts to it. The first part is simply a board with a couple of LEDs on it, and there's a circuit in there that tells you whether the voltage is above or below 35 volts. Above gives you green LED, below it's yellow, to let you know that your batteries are starting to get weak. So ignore that. The important thing was the speed control. It appeared to be a transistor. We looked carefully and found two magnets about 50, 60 degrees apart. When you turn the throttle, the two magnets spun around. In the center of this device, which looked like a transistor, one magnet would get closer and the other magnet would get farther away. So we did some thinking, and obviously a Hall effect transistor.
Well, that's pretty neat.
My surprise, it's very common. It basically uses 5 volts. I found out what the leads are. One is, of course, the ground, which goes to one of the leads of the transistor. I don't remember which one. One is the hot supply, which is 5 volts. And the other one is the output, which varies from 0 to 4 volts. As you move the two magnets, it makes a very nice linear increase in voltage, which operates the pulse width modulation, which makes the bike go faster or slower, in effect, the throttle. So, the question that I couldn't find an answer to is, can I hook this up with another one? In effect, is it possible to put two Hall effect transistors in parallel? One for a conventional half-width throttle, and one for the thumb. This way I can change hands back and forth, change fingers, whatever. So it really turned into a question.
Well, if you put them in parallel, how are you going to regulate which one is providing the reference voltage for the throttle?
My hopes were that when you put them in parallel, they would both be zero. Unfortunately, I'm wondering if one would feed back into the other when it started providing voltage.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with that. Okay. I think you've answered your question. Anybody have
An additional phone on the subject, please call K2BAR.
This is K20.
Jim?
Apparently, it is a Hall effect transistor switch. And the proximity of the magnet, of course, as you know, we use the calculators with Hall effect transistors. And when we press down on that little thing, we move something close that's magnetic, and the thing goes. It goes from a 0 to a 1, or 1 to a 0, I'm not sure. But anyway, I don't see any problem with paralleling those type things. There are control devices that use things like that that take an input from various different points. And basically, you have two or three different points that do the same thing. If you want to parallel them up that way, I think you could do that.
Do you think an output on the output side, you might want to have some sort of isolation resistor network?
A diode?
That might work. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going. You got to do something to at least buffer the thing. I think a diode would probably be a better choice.
Again, the other Hall effect transistor that's not energized would look like a diode. I think it'll work.
Here's my advice to you, Noel. If you would choose to replicate the circuit for the other control, my suggestion is that you replicate it twice. Take out the one that's there and put the two that you have in parallel, the two you create, with the idea that if something blows up, you can, you know, reinstall the original one and continue to operate your bike.
I was just going to buy the new one for $15 off of eBay and try it that way. Worst case, they all seem to be universal. I'd buy another one for $15 and replace the two I blew up.
Yeah, okay. Well, the only concern I would have is that you do this on a Friday and find out that you're not going to be riding your bike for a week or two.
True.
It was just a thought. Anybody else have a comment?
Yeah, that's 2K.
Go ahead, James.
There's a good chance that it's just a pull down. If you disconnect the transistor or the controller and look at the lead coming out of the driver box, does that voltage go up or down?
Didn't do that at Kidnight. However, all of the literature that I found so far says there, and they gave me the color-coded wires. One wire is straight, 36 volts, and that goes to the voltage circuit that tells you whether your battery is decent or not. And there's three other wires. One is the ground, which is also the ground for the voltage, and also goes to one of the leads on a transistor. The other two leads are, I don't know which one is which, collector, base, emitter, but the other two leads also just go straight to the transistor. There didn't appear to be any circuitry in between, just the three wires going to the Hall effect transistor. I was thinking double throw switch, one pair going to one device, one pair going to the other, the center going back to the controller. When I want the finger throttle, I flip it one way. When I want it the twist throttle, flip it the other way. And I have no interaction. Back to net. This is F2OEL.
Yeah, I like that. Anybody have any follow-up comments?
Yes, Mr. K.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, my question is, if the voltage were to go, say, to 5 volts, when you disconnect the output lead from the controller Hall effect device at the input of the speed control module, then it might well just act like an open collector transistor, at which point, yeah, either one of them can pull low. Let's see, is zero speed near 0 volts or the 4 volt? Which way does is the sense of the thing?
I don't know on this particular one, but the net seems to say, when I read the literature, Zero, nothing moves. 4 volts, maximum.
Yeah, it's not going to work then. If it's what I think it is, it's actively pulling down. And once it's pulled down, it's down. And the other one not pulling down is not going to make it go high. Anyway, so it doesn't work. Anyway, you have to work something else out in order to just simply parallel them.
Actually, my question was, is there any chance of blowing anything up or destroying something so I parallel them and try it?
I'll have to do some lookup on Hall effect transistors and see a little more about them.
Comment?
Go ahead, Zetto.
This is K2Zetto. Yeah, I agree with Jim. If it indeed is working that way, where once it's pulled down, then the other one in parallel is not going to do anything. If they were both open, and then activated, then each one would go on, and it could work. But now you're going to have to get some more circuitry in between there.
KF2ID, the comment.
The Google keywords are throttle, Hall, or Hall effect. And, of course, I was using 36 volt because I wanted the 36 volt light as opposed to the 24, 12, or 48 volt. But throttle, Hall, and he also used the word half twist because I don't want a full twist. I didn't want some throttle. I wanted the half twist. But that's what I started doing my searching, and I found some with hookup diagrams. It's sub pieces of explanation in various parts. One really decent explanation of what the wires did.
That's
this is Ben
Julio. F2ID with a comment.
Go ahead, Ben.
I think Noel said right in the beginning that he uses the throttle controls the speed of the bike. I believe he said that, if I didn't misunderstand him, and that he moves these magnets, two magnets, I guess one is north and one is south, closer or further from the transistor, control the speed of the spike. Now that's the case, and means they're controlling the pulse width or the pulse rate. I guess it's the pulse width. If that's the case, then that Hall effect transistor is used as a sort of variable resistor using the Hall effect. It's not simply an on and off. Otherwise, its spike would be at maximum speed or a zero speed. You only have two choices. So it must be used as a variable resistor, sort of a magnetically controlled variable resistor, in which case if you put two of them in parallel, then obviously you'll have the parallel resistance of the two of them. So so you wouldn't have independent control. All depends on where one was and where you set the other. You just look at it as two parallel resistance, and the speed will be dependent upon the parallel resistance of the both. So the only way you're going to get out of that is to put another control transistor or something to some kind of circuitry to switch one end of the circuit and the other one out. You'll just have the range of the two parallel resistance. The maximum resistance will obviously be half. So wherever that ends up, I don't at bike speed. Whatever half the resistance ends up in bike speed, half the maximum resistance is. So unless I misunderstood it, that's what would happen, and then you would have to have some kind of circuitry to switch one in and one the other out. KF2ID.
Okay, any further comments? Alrighty. So, Noel, have we gotten you to a better place?
Yes, let's bring it to Kidnight and see if we can let the magic smoke out.
Great idea.
Now, as the case may be. Alrighty. Very good. Anybody have any follow-on comments that they just brought up before we move on?
I just have a follow-up question, which has nothing to do with this. That crop walk. I looked it up in the... I sent George an email, so far I've got no response. Also, I looked it up on the internet, and the internet says it's on the 19th. That makes it this Friday, not Sunday or not Saturday. I don't know. Does anybody remember what date the crop walk is? You know, he announced it at the last meeting, so maybe somebody here remembers AF2ID.
Okay, I haven't had a chance to talk with George since you mentioned it last night. Does anybody know when the crop walk is scheduled for?
It's definitely not a Friday.
It's definitely a Sunday. Because the town where it runs through, you know, wants them on Sundays when it's quieter. All right. Well, if someone can get a hold of YLH, that would probably be useful, and maybe send out a barrow blast on the email list. That would probably be a good thing. Alrighty, any other check-ins for the net, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
K2DSL, no question.
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB, one question.
Okay, David Richard, I got you in. Anybody else? Okay, let's go to your question, Mr. Rich, KC2PYB, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, this is KC2PYB. Recently in the last VHF contest, I went mobile, and what I did was I bought one of those mounts that I just slid on the lip of the, you know, the hatchback or the trunk or whatever, or hood. And when I first put it on and tried it, the power source I was using was kind of low, so that was part of the problem. I fixed that. Then I noticed that I still wasn't really getting any good even reception, and so I took the mount off and I scraped away some of the paint where down to the bare metal of the rear hatch of my van. And put it on, and that seemed to correct it a lot. Still wasn't working really great. I think it was more location than anything else, because I could receive, but I was having a hard time transmitting. And I had a lot of power lines very close over me or over into the side of me, so I kept saying, well, it's location, location, location. But I had seen a picture of a very similar mount that somebody had installed with a stick antenna on their car, and they had it up on the hood area, and they had a ground wire coming off of this to the, I guess, chassis of the vehicle. You know what I mean? And I thought, well, maybe they got to do that because they're so close to the alternator and the battery and all that other kind of garbage whirling around in there. So I was just wondering, what does anybody think about that, if you need another ground, even though I'm all the way in the back of the vehicle, and about as far away from the motor as I can get?
So you think that the motors, I'm just trying to understand, the motor's working fine, the antenna's just not working right, and you're worried about grounding? I'm just not quite following you.
None of the instructions said anything about grounding this mount. It's like I think it's a T400 or something like that, very similar to it, just but different manufacturer. And the only real contact you have with the car is these two step screws that hold it on, which I didn't move the paint away from the inside of the hatchback, and it seemed to work much better after that. I was able to receive. But I was wondering, even though I'm on the back of the vehicle, should I have a... some kind of ground to the chassis of the vehicle, or is it something I'm not doing right or something? Originally, I think it's just my location that I was in because of the power lines.
Okay, I got you now. Yeah, you need to have a counter voice. I mean, let's think about what your antenna is. Your antenna is like either a quarter wave or a 5/8. Its counterpoise, or if you will, mirror image, is the ground plane that you provide, in this case, through the two set screws of the base, to whatever metal the set screws can make contact. So I think your problem is one of perhaps inadequate or inappropriate contact. And inadequate contact inappropriate mass of metal giving you the ground plane. On a hatchback, it's a little tough because, of course, you know, the you have a minimal amount of metal. But since it's a big door, if I remember right, it's a Chrysler product, so I think, you know, you'll be able to do something. There, I think job one would be to remove the antenna from the mount, unscrew the mount. You'll see where the two little ding holes are from the set screw. Go in there with an awl and really scrape it out really, really well, and maybe even clean it up with some Scotch-Brite. Set the set screws down in place, and then try it again. If that works better, it should, because you'll have bare metal now. Then I would just goop up the around the set screws to keep the air from getting moist and causing rust on the hatchback. Okay.
I kind of done something like that while I was out. I took my knife out and I saw where the set screws made a mark on the hatchback, and I scraped the paint away down to the bare metal. You know, and then put the clip back, you know, put the clip mount back on and screwed it down, and that's when I was starting to receive really good. And, you know, I was having trouble transmitting. It's like a stick antenna, you just move the jumper along it for the proper frequency you're on, you want. And so I was wondering, well, do I really need an antenna tuner to come with this thing? The antenna doesn't say it needs one. I was thinking of a mag mount, and then I could put the mag up on top of a, you know, 5-inch mag mount, and then put the antenna up on the car hood, not hood, but the roof of the van, and then, you know, now you've got a tremendous amount of metal for it to hook onto. But the instruction book for the 897 says that they don't recommend mag mounts to be used with the ATIS antenna. But, so, you know, I'm a little bit in a quandary there what to do.
KQRIW. Go right ahead, and there's a lot of other good reasons for not using a mag mount, but including insufficient ground. Go ahead, Dick. Good evening. KQRIW, KQBAR.
Good evening, Gordon. KQLIW, Dick here. The counterpoise for using a hatchback on 2 meters, that's a fairly substantial piece of metal. It's a good number of wavelengths and diameter, so to speak. But on the HF bands, 80, 40 through 10 meters, for instance, the metal of the hatchback, I suspect, might not be enough of a counterpoise. If you think about what a counterpoise is, it's like the other half of a dipole. If I was putting up a real 40-meter dipole, I'd have 32 feet of wire to the right, 32 feet of wire to the left. The left-hand side is really the counterpoise for the right-hand side. The way the antenna works is that your transmission line is acting like a pump. It's pumping electrons from the left side to the right side on the first cycle, and the other way on the other half cycle. There's got to be a reservoir that's big enough. Well, each half of the dipole is a big enough reservoir for the other half. In the case of the hatchback, for a quarter wave, not as much required for a 5/8, but in the case of a quarter wave, there's got to be a big enough chunk of metal to act as a counterpoise. These are some of my opinions. I'm worried that the hatchback has got, let me drop. I'm worried that it's got a rubber seal around the edge to make sure that the rain doesn't come in. Therefore, the majority of the metal of the hatchback is not really well connected to the rest of the vehicle. By way of the latch, you've got a connection, but I wouldn't call that a good RF connection. If you want to continue to use the hatchback, I would consider adding some kind of a braid mechanism around the pivoting joint. The pivoting joint is not making real good RF contact across that pivot, but you can force it to make good contact by way of a nice braid that you install in that area, so that when the hatchback itself, the metal of the hatchback, by way of the braid, maybe in two places on the pivot, now connects to the rest of the metal of the vehicle. You eventually are now coming to using the hold-on vehicle as a counterpoise, and on HF frequencies, I think that could work a whole lot better. I didn't say it's easy, but it's a possible approach. These are opinions. I haven't done it. I'm not that much of an HF person. Back to you, Gordon. K2RIW.
Yeah, you have to understand Dick's idea of an IF is 144 megahertz, and you know that's on one of his low frequency days. Anyway, Richard, do you understand that concept around the hinge?
Yes, I agree with him. That was what I was thinking of. Maybe there wasn't enough metal in the hatch because there's a very large glass window in the back. There is a rubber, you know, grommet running all the way around it for, you know, weather purposes. And I was thinking, was, do I really have a good connection to the body via the two hinges, you know, that this thing pivots up and down on? So I probably somehow have to, if I was still going to use that, I got to bring a braid over and somehow connect it over to the body of the vehicle so I would pick up that whole big, you know, mass of metal. I was operating on 6 meters at that time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that would make a good sense. In fact, what I do for my rig, and I've not had any problems with it, and I sometimes wonder why, in my mobile, I take a big honking piece of braid, insulated braid, and run it to the back of my radio and bolt it directly to the seat mount of the, I mean, I have a truck, so the seat mount's rather substantial. So I cleaned the metal and bolted it to that. But I also bolted a solid conductor next to the braid, same exact length. And I do that to provide the return for the power. And that seems to be fine. Coming from the battery, I have a double-fused piece of number 4. So I don't have any problems there. And had I had a problem, I would have just run a second piece of number 4 to the battery directly, which is probably advisable. But in my case, I didn't want to run the risk of a ground loop, and I just took a whack at it to see if the return path was good enough. It was. By extension, since I bolt all my antennas to the chassis of the car, and there's, again, good ground there, the seat to the floor to the roof rack are all bonded together, and therefore there are no problems with counterpoise in my case, or noise or anything else. Over.
Yeah, I understand that, and probably the next time we're together, I'll look at how you got that grounded, because either that or I'm going to have to try to figure out some of the way or some of the place to move that clip mount. And it's a little hard on the van because the doors slide on both sides, so I don't know if that would it might interfere with the door locking and closing.
I'm sure we can find some place to do it. I think the real trick is to put it on the rear door, and therefore you don't have a slide mechanism to worry about, and the aesthetics of having braid running up and down a slide mechanism. Just a simple pivot will be fine.
Yeah, okay. That's what, you know, I was thinking, that you'd have to somehow move it up to the main body of the vehicle where, you know, you got this huge chunk of metal, or somehow, you know, jump across and pick up the body of the car. So I thank everybody.
You're welcome, and thank you, Dick. Alrighty. Any other check-ins for that? Please call K2BAR.
Yeah, I've got one further comment.
Hey, Dick.
Because we amateurs try to be scientists, it would be an awful lot of fun to take a reading the way you've got the antenna clipped to the hatchback right now. Take a reading of standing wave ratio, or if you had an impedance meter, great. When you add the braid, is there a change in the antenna impedance? If the answer is yes, you know you're providing a heck of a lot more grounding of the hatchback metal to the rest of the frame of the vehicle. If you see no change of any kind, then what you did was belt and suspenders, and maybe the pivot mechanism and the latch was already providing a good enough grounding to the rest of the vehicle, but it's just very hard to confirm. So, as I said, if you have the wherewithal, it would be nice to make that measurement to see if there is a change. KQLIW.
Just be advised, Richard, to Dick's point, the club has a MFJ 434 antenna analyzer, and those measurements could easily be taken. Further, a couple of us have them as well. So I think Tony's the keeper of the clubs, but that might be something to consider. I think it'd be a really good idea. Anything else, anybody? Alrighty, any additional check-ins, please call K2BAR. Okay, let's move on. Any comments, questions, or confusions regarding the VHF contest? I actually didn't get a chance to operate this weekend, which is kind of a bummer because I was sort of semi-set up to do so, and then one thing led to another, and it didn't happen. So, such is life. But my ham shack's a lot more organized, and it's getting better by the day. I think I'm going to be talking about it for the next 20 years, the way Jim talked about his for the last 40. But that's okay. Now, that'll bring me up to 42, Jim, by the way. Or 40 as well, I should say. Anyway, anybody have any anecdotes about the VHF contest? Please call K2BAR.
W2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
Nothing extraordinary. I had a total of 46 contacts. 44 of them were on 6 meters, and 2 of them were on meter FM. And usually I get more contacts on 2 meter FM, but it didn't happen this time. So be it, you know. Good, I mean, I got a new grid out of it. FN12 was the first time I worked on FN12 from here, so that was good. I've already sent the fellow a QSL card. That was good. And I worked, you know, all the 41, 42, 43 up at the Maine and whatever, and K1WHS, I think he's up in Maine, and down to FN29 or something, FN10, 11, and FN12. So that was pretty good considering there's no real sporadic eating to help us out. Pretty happy with that. Back to that, W2JK.
That sounds delightful, it really does. Any other tales of the contest, K2BAR? Alrighty. Well, there was another suggestion that Rachel might want to talk about, or Rachel and Jim might want to talk about, the completion of the saga of noise reduction in Rachel's vehicle. Just remind everybody that not everybody is familiar with the problem, so if we could have a problem statement, i.e. what vehicle it is, what year, you know, and what kind of interference there was, where it was experienced, things like that, as a kind of like a table setting exercise, and then we can go on to the solution part. Rachel, would you like to go for that? KC2SGF, K2BAR. Alrighty, K2ZO, K2BAR.
K2BAR, K2ZO. Well, the answer is we haven't fixed it yet. That car she's got, that, I don't know, little Korean job, really puts out a lot of garbage. We did try a number of different things with an inductor and a capacitor, and basically what we were doing was trying to power the handy-talkie off the cigar lighter, and there was about 30% modulation from some whine in the car. I'm not sure what it was, just probably alternator. And even substituting a couple of different inductors and adding some more capacitors still didn't get it out. I think the only thing that will get it out is a three-terminal regulator, I happen to have one that I'm building up for my handy talkie, and we'll try it on hers and see if it works. It's a 5-amp, three-terminal regulator that you can set the voltage with a resistive divider on it. And hanging that on the 12-volt bus in the car, I think, will do it. Go ahead.
Well, that sounds great. So, little inductor, little three-terminal regulator, and you're good to go. Wow, that's pretty neat. Anybody else have any questions, comments, confusions for Jim about this? Or if Rachel wants to jump in. Okay, well, very good. Congratulations, by the way, to Don on his new grid. Sorry to see the club didn't operate this past weekend. I think when the club doesn't have a station on the hill, I think that affects overall participation, not just individuals going up on the hill, but even individuals staying at home or doing the grid circling thing. So we need to consider that as part of the game. Maybe some of us need to get a little more motivated for these contests. There's something that I saw. If you guys have a spare $50,000 around for just an antenna support and its installation, I'm going to suggest that you go to the www.superbertha.com website, superbertha, BERTHA.com website, and you will click on the tower tab at the top, and you will see a wonderful set of pictures. Actually, there's actually a photo gallery. You might want to click on that and run the slideshow. Very impressive. W3TX makes these things. He sells them because when he was 20 years old, he had a tower vandalized, so he vowed to have a self-supporting tower in his future. He was so successful that he actually sells the things. But they sell for about $37,000, figure about $50,000 just to put, you know, the tower in the ground before you put anything on it or hook any radios to it. But they can go from 20 feet to, or 10 feet, depending on which one it is, up to 210 with two different rotator configurations. One from the bottom and another one you can have a top section that will rotate independently. So superbertha.com, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, other than lots of property and antenna space and, you know, rigs, I mean, with all due respect, you know, with a little bit of care, if we had the property and we had the interest and the desire, we all could probably make some life choices that would make, you know, a fairly, you know, decent ham station possible, whether it's here or whether it's in a more rural setting or whatever. I got to tell you, this is, you know, if one needed a new goal to strive for it at 50, that would be it. You know, I feel like when I look at this tower, I look at, you know, I feel like a teenager going, wow, I'll never own something like a KWM-2A. Well, now I have something that's probably as good or better. In fact, it is better. So go figure. And a lot of, and every one of us does, pretty much. And that's the point, you know. The rigs of our youth that we used to drool over, we pretty much have, and then some. We may not have all the performance points, but we might have some operational benefits. But, gee, what could you have that would be better than this? A crank-up tower that goes to 200 feet with two independent rotator mechanisms in the same tower, so the top section can rotate independently of the rest. Oh, man. It just got me drooling. I just figured I'd share that with you guys. Superbertha.com. Anybody comment or bring up another subject, K2BAR.
Hey, Gordon, how you doing? K2BAR, K2ZO.
Gotcha.
That kind of reminds me when I was a kid, when I used to go over to Harrison Radio and look in the window at that big Collins KW1, and I said, my God, that's beautiful, but I'll never be able to own one.
And now you could if you really wanted one.
But I wouldn't even want one today.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's true. But, you know, from a technology viewpoint, you own several things that are probably better.
It's true, but not a big bird there.
Yeah, but you do have a stepper, which is kind of neat. I saw a stepper in the box, a three-element stepper with the 3040 meter kit added, all new in the box for, I want to say less than $2,000 the other day. I saw that float by, I just cried and kept going.
They're getting a lot of money for them, and they're really a good antenna. Of course, I don't have the 40 meter kit, and I don't need it. I've got a 40 meter dipole inverted V, and it does all I need on that band. But it certainly is a great antenna.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I used to go past Harrison Radio in Manhattan when they moved a little further north, up near City Hall, and. Yeah, that was always a tough place to go visit. In fact, you're going to laugh. I could save my money to hear the Helen gone, but there always seemed in high school to be something I wanted that was just a little out of my reach, maybe $50, you know, which for the 1970s, early 1970s, that was still a lot of money for a kid. And, you know, certainly wasn't going to get it from my parents, not happening. And I can remember crying that the President's Day sale came generally 3 weeks before my tax return. Always used to bother me. I mean, I'd file early, but it didn't matter. My tax return wouldn't come until later. And that always bugged me. Anyway, this year on 9/11, by the way, I was once again reminded that my first, shall we say, ham-built radio that I really used on VHF was a TR-22C that I bought at Barry Electronics at 512 Broadway. I bought it with some savings and also some gift money for my graduation. I went out of my last exam in high school, went to Barry's, stayed there for an hour and a half after buying the radio so I could charge it up, went to the World Trade Center, went up on the observation deck, and worked Lou from Little Falls W2F something, I can't remember now. He used to live on Browertown Road. And at the time, I just moved to Little Falls, so he was literally a half a mile from my house. But that was my first contact on 2 meters with a TR-22. And so every year on 9/11, I think about that and the fact that my father died 5 years before in 96 on 9/11. But anyway, neither here nor there. Those old, you know, ham radio stories are kind of neat. So any other questions, comments, confusions, new check-ins, et cetera, K2BAR. Okay, I have BDU. I'll get you first. So hang 1 second, Helmut. Who was the other station?
W2JEK.
Okay, very good. Helmut first, and then Don. Was that Helmut? Maybe I was wrong. Who was the other station who came in with Don? Okay, it's all yours, Don. W2JEK, K2BAR.
W2JEK, yeah, I think he got that kind of money. Rather than buying an antenna like that, go out and buy a piece of land out in the boondocks away from all the electronic pollution. My friend Mike got W3TS out in Pennsylvania is a 160-meter fanatic, and I mean, he knows when the neighbor puts in a new dimmer switch in the house or something like that, and right now he's got something that is bothering him, and it's one of these on and off things, and going around with a receiver trying to locate the thing. Electronic pollution business is something that you can open that. I mean, the antenna's a night, but if you can't hear because of all the racket that the being produced in the neighborhood, it's useless to spend that kind of money. Figure out a way to overcoming all that electronic nonsense. It would be better. I don't know how you can do that. Everybody wants to make stuff cheap in a plastic case without any bypassing or anything. So I guess that's okay. Anyway, my thought. Back then, that W2JEK.
Well, yeah. I think that's appropriate. Well, a good piece of land would be underneath it would be a good thing as well. I keep joking that 2014 is the magic number, unless circumstances otherwise dictate that we stay, go, or do both before or later. But right now, that would be my target time frame. Unfortunately, that's going to be a sunspot maximum. It'll take me another 2 or 3 years to get the station to where I want. So I am looking at ideas for land elsewhere. One of the thoughts I had, Don, was to actually lease a piece of property for a couple of years with an option to buy. Provide some instant revenue to somebody for land they probably don't use, so I can go play with it, see if there's RF issues on the site, and go from there. So there is that possibility. I don't really want to move out of the Northeast, and I certainly, I like New Jersey, don't get me wrong, it's just the taxes here are insane. So we'll have to see as to where that all goes. In any case, we have a child to educate. That's task one, and Lord knows what's going to happen with the other two in the interim. Although James got a job offer today, but he's going on an interview for another job on Monday, so that's a good thing as well. But land is key. And land is cheap now, guys. If you got any money, go buy it. Anyway, any other comments, questions, confusions? K2BAR. Well, I think we can just see if there's any other additional check-ins. And I think I'm going to throw it to Tony for some reminders and Jim for some reminders, and then we'll secure if there's nobody else wanting to check in. This is K2BAR.
KF2ID again. Again, I'm getting back to that crop walk. Maybe some of the new check-ins to remember what the date of the crop walk is. I tried to call George on the phone. Like I said, I sent him an email and got no reply yet. I tried to call George on the phone, and the phone number at least is listed in our ham radio. The barrel list is not connected or something, I guess. And moved to what? Maybe moved to his trailer, I don't know. So maybe the newer check-in. Does anybody remember in the last meeting, sign-in sheet for the crop walk, what day it was exactly? Because, as I say, I looked into the internet, and they gave me 10/19, and that's Friday for the Bergen County crop walk, and I know that's what he's running. So maybe somebody remembers something.
W2JEK.
Good, Doc.
Yeah, I had it written down on my copy of the barrel bulletin there. It's the Sunday, October 5th. It's at 11:30 a.m. at the Pascack Reformed Church. That's at Pascack Road and Park Street in Park Ridge.
Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate that. That answers my question. thanks very much. Okay, this is KF2ID with K2BAR.
Thank you. That's also the county cert day, by the way. If anyone's going to be up at the county fire training center for that weekend, or for that day, I should say. Alrighty, do we have some announcements? Mr. Jim, for the Ham Fest first, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. I got it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Ham Fest is October the 4th, and we do have a need for some volunteers. I think we've got a sign-up sheet with a few people on it, but if you want to come, come on down. We do need people early in the morning to help get things organized, and I think it'll be a roaring, successful day, hopefully, if the weather is nice. Getting lots of email from people who are looking forward to going there. And, of course, we'll see you all again on Kit Night next Tuesday.
It's a beautiful thing. And where is the Ham Fest?
Oh, I forgot about that. At the Westwood Junior Senior High School in Washington Township.
Most excellent, most excellent. And the door is open at what time?
5:30. They have promised me they'll have it open at 5:30 so we can all get into the bathroom.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. The bathrooms. Anyway, very good. Thank you, Jim. And I'm going to be best man at a wedding that day, and the timeline keeps changing, and there's a rehearsal dinner now that wasn't scheduled even until a week ago, and it now is. So that's pretty cool. KC2NZD is getting married, so that's pretty cool. And just for your reference, by the way, KC2NZC is my son John. They got their licenses in the same test session, so very cool. And he's a family friend. So let's see, K2AMI, your announcements.
This is K2AMI. Now, that October 5th apparently is going to be a very popular day because it's also the VARA meeting night, first Sunday in October. So that gives, a possible wedding day, but it's important that at 7 o'clock at night, the VARA meeting. I think that Jerry is doing a presentation at Software Defined Radio. I think that's the program. That'll be the VARA meeting. October 4th, the day before VARA Hamfest. And going back to October 5th, that's the Hall of Science Amateur Radio Club in New York Hamfest Day. So Saturday is ours, Sunday is the Lions. So busy. I did also want to mention that, as Gordon mentioned, it's not Gordon this morning, but excuse me, that's the weekend. You may have B-17 flying because there is a scheduled air show down at the airport called Wheels and Wings at Teterboro Airport. You wish a nice article in the Bergen Record today. Not a big one, but an advertising type article. Surprisingly, in that article, they said that for $25, they would have 40-minute flights over the Statue of the Back in New York Harbor. That's the first time they've done that. Usually it's a $400 or $500 flight up the river and down the Statue River. Usually they go up to Bear Mountain and down to back home. I don't know if they drop. They're going to have a C-54, one that was at the Berlin Airlift, and they're going to have helicopters and lots of civilian aircraft. So, part of the new cars. It's quite a nice show, but sort of money. The money is $5 for seniors, but $10 for the general public. Also $5 for children. And it goes to where they go, they go to the museum down there, the airport museum. I'm going to make an effort to go down. I'd love to watch the B-17 take off. My big thrill was, after a couple times, I was under the engine of the B-17, swung around. The tail gunner was facing, revved up the engine. The back washer, the prop washer of the plane, blew my hat off. So that was a big thrill. Anyway, so I probably won't go down until Sunday. Anybody interested, I'd love to contact you. Let me now turn it back to net control.
Most excellent. Yeah, that is a lot of fun. 17s are really neat. The first time I saw a 17 was at Barksdale Air Force Base in 1971, I guess it was, or 70. Probably 71. And, you know, that's the home of the B-52s and the 8th Air Force, if I remember right. So, Mr. Curtis LeMay's little private aviation wing, hi. It's also a ham, by the way. There's also George Wallace's running mate. But anyway, probably one of four people here who probably remember that. But anyway, it was interesting to see. And the 17 was viewed as a huge aircraft for its time. Next to a B-52, it's a little teeny tiny thing. But boy, very impressive. Very impressive. Alrighty. Let's see, what else do we need to do at this point? I don't know. I guess if there's any other announcements, questions, comments, confusions, please go. K2BAR.
Announcement.
Never mind. Go ahead, Jim.
that's 2K. Yeah, one of the little requests. I haven't had a whole lot of traffic on this, but also on October 5th is the date where we need to announce the slate of candidates for the upcoming year for Barra. And being a part of the whole nomination committee,